Mini episode 61 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by First Down Scouting, delivering the most thorough scouting service available, uncovering the NFL stars of tomorrow. Follow them on the web at the number one, stdownscouting.com.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 61. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here with you tonight. We've got two of our great FDH Lounge dignitaries joining me in a second. This is our final FDH Lounge mini episode for 2011, and it's just the way that I wanted to wrap up the year. Both myself and our senior producer, Steve Servillo, very much wanted to wrap up the year with a couple of good friends of ours and folks who have been key contributors over the course of time with the program here as we wrap up the 2011 calendar year, and we are 2 weeks short of wrapping up 5 years of the FDH Lounge. More to come on that. Check the FDHLounge.com and the FDHLounge.blogspot.com in early January to see what we've got planned for January 14th, 2012. That is our five-year anniversary. But before we get to that, of course, there is tonight, and as I say, the two individuals that we wanted to have on the program. We've had these guys on individually. We've had these guys on collectively. It's great to do it both ways. And they have been on. We've had them on collectively. We've generally discussed the entertainment industry with them because both of them cover a couple of different areas here, but that's sort of where they overlap. Our good friend Simon Applebaum from Tomorrow Will Be Televised. He is, of course, at the intersection of TV and technology, and our good buddy Lloyd Carroll covers sports. He covers some entertainment. He covers some accounting, some travel, some what have you, but if there was any kind of, Venn diagram, probably wouldn't be the right phrase that I'm looking for here, but essentially, wherever you might plot this out to find overlap, I think it would be in the entertainment industry, and hence, that's why we bring them on here tonight to look at the year 2011 in entertainment. Our good friends, Simon Applebaum and Lloyd Carroll, both from the New York area, joining us here tonight. Fellas, thanks for coming on. Hope you guys are having a great holiday season and Happy New Year.
Yeah, great, Rick. Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year, Simon.
Thank you, Lloyd. Thank you, Rick. Good to be with you.
I really appreciate that our good friend Russ Cullen from Sportsology has made the platform available to us when we've needed to use it, and I certainly want to send a shout-out to Russ and to thank him very much for that. I want to start here just in looking at the general landscape of the year, and it seems to me that the year itself cannot be divorced from the landscape of American culture, of what we've got going on at the moment, the mood of the country. And Simon, what I'd like to start by posing to you is the question, as I look at the very short list of fall TV hits, I'm seeing two things that might perhaps be tapping into the zeitgeist in opposite ways. You've got Two Broke Girls, which taps into all of this this fear and loathing that we've got with the Great Recession. It's a show that really kind of plays on the hard times. One of the characters is sort of a satire of a Madoff daughter. So you've got that on the one end, and then on the other end, you've got Zooey Deschanel with New Girl, and cards on the table. I'm a Zooey fan. I appreciate her work, but she's got something kind of different going on here, and it's maybe a little bit of a form of escapism with a goofy kind of a character. I know she's the bane of a lot of feminists who don't like that, who don't think that she takes herself seriously enough, and then she takes a lot of flack for that. But it seems to be a little more escapism kind of on the one end. So what have you make of these two shows becoming hits, at least in the relative sense, in the same autumn?
Well, I'll start with Two Broke Girls. Goofy comedy seems to be more in the making rather than edgy comedy these days. And say what you will about CBS. I know they sometimes are accused of playing it safe, doing safe television, not doing edgy or unique fare that gets the critics going, the fare that wins Emmy Awards and Peabody Awards and so on. But I think what makes Two Broke Girls good is the chemistry between the two women. I don't think it's the writing of the show. I think the writing is probably the worst part of it, or the not-so-great part of it, but the chemistry between the two women. and how they play off each other that I think gets the audience. As far as New Girls go, I would not say it's a hit program. It may be a borderline show, and that's because while Zoe Deschanel is getting great credit, Fox may have made a big mistake with a new show, which is take it off the air for a few weeks, like a month or two after it's on the air. You need that time to get going, to get a rhythm, and to get the audience going. When you take the show off the air, we saw that with Lost. We saw that with Flash Forward on a couple years ago on ABC. If you take the show off the air too early into its run, you lose audience, and New Girls is now playing catch-up. It is not a hit by any means, and who knows if it lasts a year.
Interesting. Well, let me ask you a follow-up before I go to Lloyd here. And this is not playing Monday morning quarterback because, again, Fox finds itself in this dilemma from year to year, so the advice we're offering could be constructive. If you're looking ahead to the next fall season or the one beyond that or whenever, knowing that they have that block of baseball commitments in October with the League Championship Series and the World Series, would it be your advice that if they have a show that they're really geeked up about and they think really has star potential, hold it off until November?
Yeah. If it means that, or if it means preempting it for a couple weeks of baseball, I would say start the show fresh in November rather than in September, October, and that way you get a clear 13-week run or 26-week one to make it.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Lloyd, I'd just like to follow up with you on that and get your sense of how shows like this are sort of tapping into the mood of the country. And I know that you're somebody who is also very much immersed, in this national, this ugly kind of national mood the last 3 years or so, being there in New York. I know you see it up close an awful lot. How do shows like Broke Girls or Two Broke Girls kind of tap into that? And conversely, do you attribute any at least relative success for something like Zoe Deschanel to people wanting a little bit of escapist fare?
Well, let me just take Two Broke Girls first. Certainly covering the Mets and Bernie Madoff and the Wilpons in there. I mean, he definitely taps into a certain zeitgeist here. But as far as Zoe Deschanel, actually, I don't even know how to pronounce her name, so I'm going to let Simon said it first. And I hope I said it right, Zoe Deschanel.
Oh, thank you.
I have never been a big fan of hers. I always find she basically plays the same role all the time. I saw what, the 500 Days of Summer. She always plays the girl who's very attractive, spacey, is hot, pretends that she doesn't know she's hot. Guys with a heart of gold get stomped all over by her, and you know, it bores me, so I refuse to watch the show. That's because, no matter what, it always seems to come out that way. You have a show you guys didn't mention, but I think really taps into the mood, maybe more than the two shows you've mentioned, and it's gotten very little publicity, is Person of Interest. Now here's another guy whose name I can't pronounce. Jim Caviezel, did I say that right, Simon?
I think
Jim Caviezel.
I find, he kind of plays the Clint Eastwood bounty hunter, man with no name, going after the bad guys, playing by his own rules, basically a vigilante, tapping into the whole post 9/11 aspect with Michael Emerson. I find it a very well done show. I enjoy it, but it's gotten zero publicity. I'm just curious to get your thoughts on that, Simon.
Actually, it's doing very well. If you think it doesn't get publicity, I can tell you this. The audience loves it. It's a top 20 show. It's been like the top 15, top 20 all season long. I agree with you. It's not getting as much play on air as Unforgettable or Two Broke Girls. But it is hanging tough. And I think, again, it's a show that has sort of its own spin on post 9/11, the issue of security, the issue of it has a little Homeland Security type spin also. It lets they're trying to prevent crimes before they happen. But, again, it's a semi-safe show for CBS, but it's a show that the audience somehow finds attractive. And I know you can get down on CBS for coming up with these kind of shows, but they seem to tap into the national psyche.
One more thing, I admire CBS. I completely admire Leslie Moonves, his staff, all over. You know, there's a network where in a world where there's always constant personnel turnover. Simon and I think we wrote at the Upfront last year, and Joanne Ross, who's their VP of sales, came out and said point blank, you go to a lot of these Upfronts and you see every year new people. With us, you see the same people here year after year after year, and that's amazing in a world of television. And I think it's because they know their audience, they know what works, they're not worried what's going to make the cover of Entertainment Weekly or People magazine. They feel they can get hits without having the glossy tabloids or the glossy magazines on their side. I find that actually fascinating.
You're absolutely right, Lloyd. And something else, too, about Two Broke Girls and also New Girl. These are two shows where the chemistry of the actresses in Two Broke and Zoe in New Girls make up for the fact that both have terrible supporting casts. You cannot tell these people apart. And sometimes these the supporting cast members come up very nasty.
Yeah, good point.
The supporting cast in New Girl, yeah, there's a lot of real edgy type stuff that happens with them. I have to say, too, I mean, Lloyd said before he's not a big Zoe fan. Cards on the table, I'm not a big Justin Long fan, so I had to suffer through a few episodes of that this fall. Boy, you talk about a guy who plays the same geeky character and whatever he gets cast in, but that just, you know, my personal opinion on that. By the way, Lloyd, since you mentioned the Mets there in regards to Two Broke Girls and Madoff, do you see any kind of a bad omen for the Steelers and the Giants going into the playoffs this year with the complete and utter tanking of the girl with the butterfly tattoo?
Well, with the Rooney Mara, huh? How is that? I haven't seen the movie. I assume it's doing well at the box office.
I heard it was doing fairly disappointing.
Really?
I don't know exactly. Simon, you might know that better than me, but I guess it didn't. It didn't quite live up to the hype as far as that goes. Right off the bat there. They had rather lofty expectations, as I understand it.
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually met her sister, Kate Mara. It was probably about 2 years ago when she was promoting the We Are Marshall movie. And she was coming in, doing various interviews with the press at what they call the round tables. And as soon as she sits down, I said to her, let's get the important question. Should the Giants fire Tom Coughlin? And she was like, whoa. I said, just kidding. Actually, it's the funny thing about the Giants. They always seem to win when Tom Coughlin's job is on the line.
Well, that'll be the real acid test going into Sunday night then, no question about that.
Looking at
the year in entertainment, I hearken back to one of the segments. We've got it up on our blog at thefdhlounge.blogspot.com, also our YouTube channel. One of the most fun segments probably we did during the course of the year. It was with you guys. It was, I believe, March 8th, looking at the whole Charlie Sheen mess. So looking back on this now, at the end of the year, with the benefit of a little bit of distance, with the benefit of seeing how it's played out at least a little bit here, Simon, I mean, how do you see the tally of winners and losers stacking up from this thing? I mean, it seemed like Chuck Lorre and the guys at the show were poised to get the last laugh the way that thing started. It has tailed off 2.5 men, of course, since that start with Ashton Kutcher. But you know, it does still seem to be a viable property, and there were real questions about that certainly last spring when we had our little round table.
Yeah, the big thing everyone was talking about was, would Ashton Kutcher step into Charlie Sheen's shoes once Warner Brothers booted Sheen off the show? And the answer is, so far, yes. Not as big maybe as some people hoped. But then again, I've always felt that 2.5 Men is more like Two Broke Girls, a show about the chemistry of the actors rather than the writing. I think it's still the most overrated comedy hit around. But you got to give credit to the actors, John Cryer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he and Ashton have gotten off very well. But you also got to say Charlie Sheen is himself a winner because one of the big things we'll be looking forward to next fall is Anger Management, which FX will run in first run cable. And then we'll go into, if it does well, we'll go into syndication. So FX is a winner. Sheen is a winner. Lionsgate is a winner for taking Anger Management. I think it's a foolproof property. The famous movie with Adam Sandler and Jack Nicholson, and I believe Sheen is playing the Jack Nicholson role. I think it'd be a big winner for Sheen if people give it a chance.
Well, that's remarkable to hear so many winners being referenced out of something that is certainly one of the ugliest Hollywood brawls, I'd say, that we've seen in many years, and that covers a lot of territory. Lloyd, do you concur with the tally of mostly winners and not so many losers?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and I'll even throw CBS in the winner spot of that. Even though the ratings may not be what they once were, don't forget, this show had been on for quite a while, and Sheen basically played the same character week in and week out, the young guy's Hugh Hefner kind of role, with the good one-liner. And, you know, you wonder how long he can keep playing that, you know, one-note role. And so even though I'm not a big Ashton Kutcher fan, perhaps shaking up the deck a little bit, creating a lot of buzz, may have actually given a second wind to this show, because it may have been running out of gas anyway. We don't know. I realize
very
that we're still doing well in the ratings, but who said how it would be this year?
True, yeah. But another question that I've got for you guys as far as it goes with the networks, Looking at TV contracts for sports, we're seeing a real trend that we haven't seen previously, very much unprecedented, of these super extended contracts. We saw that last year was year one of the new CBS/Turner sports deal for March Madness. The NFL now going and really extending themselves into, I believe, 2021, I think was the number of how far they're going. And, Simon, it's a situation where another friend of our show, Jim Lauder, back from Revision 3, he had postulated that by the time the next contract came up, he was thinking more around the middle of this decade, that maybe Google/YouTube might be a player for it. But it seems as though, Simon, that this deal is going long enough that by the time it comes up again, the TV landscape and conversion with Internet should be so much further down the line that there might be a winning bid next time for at least one of the contracts that we couldn't even fathom in today's media.
I agree, and I also would agree that down the road, don't be surprised if you see two versions of the same event, one on broadcast, one on cable. The Super Bowl, as it stands in wonderful high def, maybe ultra high def, on a broadcast network, and the 3D version on a cable network. Next year, we may see the Olympics, which is on NBC and the various cable networks, have a 3D edition. We have to see if NBC is going to make the call. We know the BBC is going to do it in London. But sort of expanding the theme, this was a very big year, a big transition year for sports on cable. We started this year with the Bowl Championship Series, the major college football bowl games on New Year's Day, for years on broadcast, going to ESPN, and it was a huge winner. March Madness. Cable got a major piece of the action, and 4 or 5 years from now, they will get the Final Four, both men's and women's for the first time. They'll get on an every other year basis. That's a huge breakthrough. We have big championship series and division series games on cable for the first time and all on TBS. And in addition, this new contract, by the way, with the NFL may allow ESPN the opportunity for a first time ever to have a playoff game. We'll have to see in the next couple of years. But the NFL left themselves an out for that and maybe an expanded Thursday night package on NFL Network.
Yeah, it would seem like that's coming, and NFL Network's been itching for an expanded one for a long time, and in as much as it is the property of the owners itself, one would think it's going to get what it wants at some point. Lloyd, what's your impressions on some of these deals? I mean, the NFL one was the most recent one, and in some ways maybe the most breathtaking because of the numbers involved in it and some of the terms and stipulations that were changed, such as, and I still haven't heard how this is going to work out specifically, some commingling of AFC and NFC games between CBS and Fox beyond what it is now. I know now it's a thing where whoever the road team is, I believe that's who the game gives.
They've been very fuzzy on like CBS would get an NFC game or Fox would get an AFC game. The only thing I'm guessing is perhaps when NBC grabs a marquee game, there may be a way of compensating, kind of like a pool.
Oh, okay.
I'm just guessing. I could be wrong on that, but that just seems to be my feeling of how all that could come into play. I mean, you can understand if, Fox has the Dallas Giants game, they lose that. Well, the best game might be New England against Pittsburgh. You know, they might say, wait a minute, we lost our big game to NBC. You know, we should be compensated some way, shape, or form. So I can see how that could happen.
Yeah, I hadn't really heard any theories on it yet. That one makes a lot of sense, just off the top of my head, as I look at it, that as far as compensating one network if it loses something. Like, I know there's always some scratching going back and forth. That I know CBS blocked NBC from getting the Tebow game a few weeks ago, and I know that Fox probably wanted to hang on to the Dallas and Giants game this week. I'd heard about that, so maybe this is a way to help make things right. And looking at some of the other developments with the year in entertainment, as we continue to broaden the scope of how people regard TV entertainment, for example, it's been a couple of years now of this cord-cutting movement. It hasn't gotten very far yet, but there are more people that are doing it, that are consuming their entertainment mostly online. There was the announcement late in the year from Google, YouTube about the 100 new premium channels that in the long run is probably going to be one of the most significant developments to come out of this year, even if it hasn't gotten much mainstream play yet. But Simon, something I'm curious about, and this is something I've seen you write about a handful of times recently here, the notion of 3D TV, and it's of course not very far down the road yet. I'd like to just draw you out a little bit on your premise about this, because you have the theory that the next year is really going to be make or break for the development of it. It's been the chicken and the egg as far as as you pointed out, about content being made for 3D and sets that can carry it. I mean, my sense of it would be, well, maybe this is going to be slowed down perhaps, but movements towards greater technology, greater clarity really seem to be inevitable in the long run. So why is it that you regard it as make or break? I find that this next year, I find that to be an intriguing premise.
Because we're at the point where you have 3D sets now in the marketplace and you have content out in the marketplace and it's not right catching on. When you talk to the content people, they say, hey, we'd like to create more original content. And maybe we create more original 3D networks, but we won't do it until the set population, the number of people with television sets, goes up. And then you hear from the TV set makers saying, well, if people don't produce more content, we're not going to get those sets up because people are not going to find things that are attractive. And that's why I think there's this chicken and egg situation. And on top of that, there's the fact that there are a lot of, I think we've discounted forever the whole idea of you get sick when you get 3D, or you watch it for an extended period of time. I think the anecdotes on that have been few and far. The problem still is that a lot of people do not want to wear glasses, or they want to wear one pair of glasses for any 3D show they watch, regardless of where they watch it or how they watch it. And that's, I think, the first step toward ultimately the ideal situation, which I think would help get sets going, which is glasses free. I think we're a year or two away. I think in a couple weeks, it's International CES, Formula Consumer Electronics Show. We're going to see more in terms of glasses-free 3D, the kind of where you, no matter how you look at the set, it will have a 3D picture. But I think that what has to happen is a lot of things have to come together simultaneously. You have to have more original content produced. That content has to be widely distributed than it is now. A lot of cable operators and DirecTV and Dish are not carrying 3D services to the masses. And on top of that, we have to have this fundamental universal pair of glasses that everyone can use, no matter what kind of set you buy or what you watch.
That's certainly a lot to ask for in terms of convergence. Hopefully it will happen. Lloyd, I know from reading your material, you make decent references sometimes to some of the new gadgetry that's coming out.
Sure.
And so, what's your sense of 3D and how
I think
it's
Simon hit it very well. I think the glasses are a big hindrance. It sounds like it'd be the smallest part, and we're talking technology, we're talking content. Honestly, I have a feeling when people turn on their TV sets, they just want to be able to watch television. They don't want to suddenly fumble with the glasses, put them on, take them off. I think that's a big deal breaker that nobody wants to talk about. It sounds so simple. It's compared to everything else that's involved with 3D, but I believe that final yard is a big one there. You can bring the ball 99
yep.
yards downfield, but people don't want to put on the glasses. You're not going into the end zone.
Yeah, and that's something that technology hasn't been able to fully correct yet. Hopefully this will be the year that's able to do that. Yeah, in our remaining time, fellows, I wanted to leave enough time to be able to let this kind of breathe a little bit. But, let's get in our plugs here. I always make reference to when you guys are on – Your information can be found off of our main links page at the FDHLounge.com. Of course, we've got a link, Simon, to your material the Shelley Palmer's site, where you've got the blog there for it. Tomorrow will be televised, and, of course, the regular broadcast that you've got on Blog Talk Radio. But I'll start with you, Simon. Get your plugs in here and, where people can find all of your material, such as they're hearing tonight.
Well, on Blog Talk Radio, it's tomorrow we televise. We're on Mondays and Fridays normally at 3 o'clock Eastern, and that's noon on the West Coast. We're also available on podcasts through iTunes.com and Zoom.net and other wonderful websites arranged by Sonobite. That's the podcast distributor here in New York that takes our podcasts and makes them happen. And thanks to everybody who's listening. We're going to probably have about 170,000 downloads this year, which is really, really wonderful. And then I write for ShelleyPalmer.com and MediaBloggers.com. That's where you find the Tomorrow We Televise column. And just a couple of other quick television things to watch for this coming year. Number one, look for more television networks to get on the air, Rick, and also more original programs, particularly scripted shows. We're seeing networks get into the scripted game, and I think we'll see more of that. Look for more diversity. That is going to be a huge issue going forward, both diversity and lack of. And we've talked about that in this program before. Also, look for Google TV to make a big play, or connected TV sets to make a big play at CES in a couple of weeks. You mentioned before about YouTube's situation with 100 channels. That's a big thing. And finally, watch out for what I think may be the next big social medium, video telephony, the ability to make a phone call and watch who you are going after on the other end on your television set in high definition. I think this is about to break loose the medium. Skype is doing it on some television sets. We're going to get a lot of interesting companies exhibiting at CES. Two of them will be on our show a week from tomorrow about that. I think this is a medium that is about to break, and it could be very intimate, very social, and maybe the biggest game-changing new advent of television.
Well, and I can vouch personally on these subjects. Again, I've been following them from your writings, from your columns, and I would urge everybody certainly to do so, because I enjoy doing that. I feel like I'm staying much more informed by keeping up with that and keeping up with your writings on the subjects. And speaking of keeping up with folks' writings, good buddy Lloyd Carroll here. Lloyd, I know people can follow you through Queens Chronicle, I believe also New York Sports Daily. You write for a number of different places. Not all of them are online, but I know there's at least a couple of them that are.
Well, certainly NewYorkSportsDay.com. You can really get Lloyd Carroll Uncensored. It's the largest independent full-service sports website in the area, and I think that my boss, Joe McDonald, is trying to expand to other cities. So I always enjoy writing for New York Sports Day, NYSportsDay.com. Certainly the flagship, Queens Chronicle, or QCron.com. Always, you can catch my columns on the arts and also on sports. I'm very proud of the fact that my column, Let's Go Dets, where I talked about the Mets' financial problems, came out 2 weeks before the New York Times decided to write the same column, basically. The Times writer lives in my area, so I assume he's a loyal column reader, so I guess imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And Good Times Magazine. Once in a while they update the website, but the voice of Long Island, goodtimesmag.com, you can catch me there. And even hopefully this year, latinosports.com will run me as well. So I always like to be part of the electronic stream here. There you have it.
Is latinosports.com, is that the same one that our friend Rich Mancuso is on?
Rich has contributed to it, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Howard Golden, there. It gets a lot of interesting writers. I'm hoping that Rich will get back and be submitting his columns in 2012.
Yeah, Mancuso's a beauty. He's the one that hooked up our Bert Sugar and Teddy Atlas discussion on the show earlier in the year. And, you know, like I said, it's been a real banner year for us, I feel, but there was only one way to really kind of bring it full circle here, and that was to have you guys on. You've been very great, very valuable to us both on air and off air, and, you know, you guys have been great resources to, you know, help bounce things off of, and, you know, again, topics like tonight, segments like tonight speak for themselves. So I want to thank you guys so much on behalf of all of us from FDH. You're very valued dignitaries, and onward and upward in 2012. Look forward to doing more great things with you fellas.
Same here, Rick. Happy New Year, Simon.
Thank you, Lloyd. Thank you, Rick. Thanks, everybody, by the way, Blog Talk Radio, too, to all of you listeners and hosts and producers out there. All the very best. Have a sensational year. Whatever you have to cause this year, this coming year, cause it and a whole lot more. And Rick, all the very best going forward. 5 years and up.
Thanks very much, guys. Really appreciate it. We'll catch you again in 2012, only on the FDH Lounge.